All right, time now to go inside the Beltway here on WPHM. Good morning. 11 minutes now past 9 o'clock. Caleb filling in for Paul Miller, and as promised, joining us on the line is the one and only Hugh Hewitt. Hugh, good morning.
Hey, Caleb, good morning, and hello, Michigan.
Hey, it's great to have you on. I got to tease you here for a second, Hugh, when you talk about Michigan. I understand why you rip on the University of Michigan so much. I, of course, am from Michigan State, so you can rip on the maize and blue as much as you want. But why do you tend to rip on just the state as a whole from time to time?
Well, you know, when I went to law school in Ann Arbor, and I was a graduate of 1983 class of law school at Ann Arbor, I learned up close and personal that unless you get up to the UP, the people aren't very nice and they don't know anything about football.
Oh,
so,
boy.
You guys have been rooting for the Lions for so long and rooting for the poor Wolverines. I mean, the Spartans have done better against Ohio State, my Buckeyes, for the last 20 years than the poor guys down there in Ann Arbor. So it's just that I like the people in the UP, but they're just mean to me because I wear my scarlet and gray.
Well, yeah, I don't mind you wearing the scarlet and gray as a green and white fan myself. Yes, we do tend to beat you guys, at least in the past we have. But I don't have any ill will towards you, Hugh. It just seems like you paint us all with a broad brush here.
Well, you know, coming up on the show today, Tim Alberta is going to join us.
I know. I always enjoy hearing from Tim, too. He's in Ann Arbor, right?
Yeah, but he's a Sparty. And so he always brings his Lions love, and I always laugh at him. He's a Tigers guy, and I think this is not the year for the Tigers, given the lights out rotation the Indians have. I wear on my sleeve the fact that there's Ohio and then there are 49 other states, or 48. There's Ohio, 48 other states, and Michigan.
Well, talking about football here, Hugh, we learned that the Power 5 conference leaders met over the past weekend, and it's seemingly more and more unlikely of fall college football. Your take on that?
Well, I am blessed to have Coach Meyer as a friend, and he sent me updates because he still got a role as athletic director down at Big Ten Land. There's a legitimate concern about the virus and the big kids. You know, you get the interior linemen of the Spartans or the Wolverines or the Buckeyes, and you got kids who are way over 300 pounds. And one of the comorbidities of the disease, although it is primarily among people 50 years and older, is weight. And they really do have to, you can't play football without interior linemen. Interior linemen are big kids, and they really, their number one job is to keep them there. Here's my solution is pretty simple. Get the kids into practice. Get them disciplined. Get them the leadership and the coaching they need. If you don't play the games, that's not going to have as adverse an impact on these kids as not having the practices. And if you have just the practices and you maintain the appropriate protocols, you're not going to lose a year. And these young men and young women, they need this, Caleb. I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I can't imagine, you know, putting aside joking, I can't imagine the Midwest without high school football. It'll absolutely devastate families and kids and their life path, their ability to get stewardship, leadership, mentorship. And this is men and women, boys and girls. I just can't imagine shutting down sports. So when Pennsylvania's governor, I'll talk about this with Selena Zito in the first hour of the show today, I'm going to ask her, you know, what about Governor Wolf? He didn't take any questions. He just said no football. In Pennsylvania, that's like saying no football in Michigan. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think that decision, more or less, we already had some of our larger school districts, I believe Lansing, coming out and saying no fall sports. That decision here in Michigan seems to be, for the most part, at least as of now, being left up to the individual school districts and school boards to make that call rather than a statewide call. But who knows what's going to happen over the next few weeks.
I don't know if you have kids. My three kids are grown, so I don't have to worry about this anymore. But if my boys had not been in the pool, they were water polo players in California. If they had not been in the pool at 6 a.m. every day, 7 months out of the year, you know, they would have been much more trouble to handle because boys are boys. And I can't imagine not having school, and I can't imagine the easiest solution is not what your governor has done. I think she's done everything wrong, literally everything wrong. And I think the solution is to go district by district and say, teachers under 50, you're required to report. And if you have a underlying condition, that's obviously not applicable. But if you are healthy, we expect you in the classroom. And to make it work as much as possible. And if your kids are fragile, they get to stay home too. But otherwise, no.
When you say our governor, going back to that, did everything wrong, Governor Whitmer, of course, is there someone who is doing it right? Because right now, Michigan's sitting pretty well. When we compare us to the other states of the union, we're right up there as far as suppressing this virus and slowly reopening. Is there someone else doing it better?
Yeah, I think Arizona's doing it best. And that doesn't mean they have the lowest number of deaths. They don't. They have an older population. My view of the virus is all we can hope for are therapeutics, which we've gotten better at. And those who are fragile take the steps they need to protect themselves. We do not need government telling people what to do. We don't need government telling stores that to mandate masks, because stores are going to mandate masks. We are a free people, and we ought to rely on that. I think your governor has issued, I don't know, hundreds of executive orders?
I think we're over the 200 mark at this point, Hugh.
That's autocracy. They've always accused Trump of being a dictator and autocrat. These governors who are governing by decree without authority of the legislature, I think Bill Barr last night with Mark Levin, I'm going to play for the audience a whole bunch of, there you hear the one plane an hour that leaves Reagan Airport in D.C., I think we're going to see Bill Barr stake out the ground that governors are not king. Governors have limits to their police power, even in an emergency. And Michigan is one of those places I think is top on my list for being out of control.
But I will have to say this, Hugh. You know, the legislature twice now in the 1940s and again in the 1970s has passed legislation granting said powers, emergency powers, to the governor. So is it really the governor to blame for exercising this power when the legislature granted them to her in the first place?
Well, there's number one, there's a federal constitution as well. And the state laws of Michigan, whatever they are, cannot override First Amendment right of assembly. They can't. They also can't override the right of parents to control the education of their children, which is constitutionally secured. The one thing I learned in Ann Arbor was con law. Sam messed up, for anyone who remembers. And, you know, there are limits to what a state government can say. If the state legislature said to the governor, you can shut down newspapers, the governor still couldn't shut down newspapers. Still unconstitutional. So whatever they've said is limited by the state constitution. Secondly, whatever they said in 1970 was bounded by the circumstances of 1970. These are different circumstances, and I think she's got to dial it back. I think they've gone over, and not just her, Gavin Newsom in California, who I thought did a fine job. The way to lead here is not by order, it's by exhortation, and she's not particularly persuasive. I was amused that she showed up at Joe Biden's house this weekend, because if they put Gretchen Whitmer on the ticket, I think we might win Michigan, we being the Republicans.
Well, she's still pretty favorable here. We've seen some polling here in Michigan, and that, you know, the response here, she still has pretty high ratings. So I'm not sure I agree with you on that, Hugh, but I am very surprised. I will give you this. I am very surprised she's still being considered.
Now, on the polling, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't pay much attention to people who unpack polls. I believe they are uniquely fragile this year. I saw yesterday we had two polls out in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, registered voters, not likely voters, which are already sketchy to begin with. They weren't weighted too badly, although the Democrats were overweighted. They had Joe Biden plus 6 in both Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. Now, I'm here to tell you, Both of those states were a 1% or less state 4 years ago. So was Michigan. Michigan was the closest state of all.
Yep.
If Joe Biden is only up 6 points in registered voters among those two states, he's only up 6 points in Michigan. And if he's only up 6 points in Michigan among registered voters, that state's in play, because I think people want to go back to work. And I honest to goodness, if we go back to regulation the way Joe and President Obama did it when they were in, we'll never get out of this mess. We'll be stuck in this mess for 30 years.
We're talking to Hugh Hewitt, syndicated talk show host, heard here on WPHM, coming up in the next hour. I do appreciate your time this morning, Hugh. You're talking about election. I kind of want to turn the conversation here to this whole debate that we've been seeing regarding absentee ballots, mail-in ballots. There's been talk about fraud. There's been talk about not accepting the results of the November election. Where do you stand on the use of quote-unquote mail-in voting?
Thank you for asking, Caleb. It exercises me a great deal when people aren't precise. I was part of a voting rights observation team in 1986 in Mississippi in Yazoo City. I take the right to vote very, very seriously. I've used absentee most of my life because I never know where I'm going to be. I've been in the media for 30 years. I never know where I'm going to be on election night. Sometimes I was in New York 4 years ago when I was the only guy at 30 Rock who voted for Donald Trump on NBC all night long with Lester and Savannah and Chuck Todd and Jim Carville. Boy, that was a strange night. But I vote absentee. I think absentee is fine. You got to go through some hoops. You got to go down and swear it out. You got to sign your name so it can be compared on the ballot. What I hate is mail ballots where the state is flooded. And I'll tell you why. I'll use myself as an illustration. Your audience has heard me refer to the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt, my wife of 38 years. We left California for Virginia 5 years ago when Bill Bennett retired, and we moved to Virginia. Well, at our old house last March, two ballots showed up, mailed to us, because California decided in their legislature to use mail by vote by mail, and they sprayed ballots everywhere in the state. Now, they were destroyed. We didn't use them. We didn't ask anyone out there to use them. We destroyed them. That is not what happens with anything else that is valuable in America. And a ballot is valuable. And there are individuals, and I ask your audience to just think about the fact that anything that is valuable in the United States is stolen and traded, often for drugs, often for a few bucks. And harvesting of these ballots doesn't imply an organized democratic effort to steal elections, though Chicago certainly has a storied history of doing just that. They got their own problems after last night.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a recipe for fraud. I like the Israeli system where you have to go back to your hometown. It's like Joseph going to Bethlehem to vote in Israel. You got to show up where your home is. And if you don't show up there, you don't vote. And I'm a big believer in that.
Interesting, Hugh. Going back to our conversation about Michigan and executive power and that authority, you know, here in Michigan, we have what we call no reason absentee voting. It's a very new concept. It was passed by a statewide ballot proposal 2 years ago by about 60% majority there saying, yeah, no reason absentee voting. So you're saying no. Just that fact alone is not okay?
No reason absentee voting. I'm fine with that. If people want to go through the process of requesting a ballot, they ought to get it. But it ought to be every single election that you have to say, send me a ballot, and then you get it sent to you.
Yeah.
What I don't like, it goes on in Colorado, California, and a few other places, is where the state uses previous voting records and sends a ballot regardless of whether that person is breathing or a resident or has made, you know, any sign of life. You know, put a mirror in front of their lips to see if they're breathing. Because if they don't do it that way, ballots such as arrived at my house in California 4 years after I left, are going to be everywhere in the United States. That's not universal absentee ballot. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
I think it's ridiculous to ask anyone why. It's an invasion of their privacy. If you want to vote by mail, perfect. But I don't want you sending ballots out to everybody. I think you take away all the fraud the moment you make someone get involved in asking for a ballot.
No, and so it sounds like Michigan's kind of leading the way then and is doing it the right way.
Oh,
and,
to say that, Caleb.
Hey,
Michigan leading the way? Oh
my God. Yeah, I gotta put those words in your mouth somehow, right?
I know, you tricked me. You tricked me into complimenting Michigan. That was a very savvy thing to do. But, you know, Michigan does lead in a lot of things. I love the state. You know, I give it a hard time. I love the state. My parents were married in Ypsilanti. My dad went to the University of Michigan Law School, as I did. I love the university. It's just that they don't know anything about football.
Well, I'll give you that. Yes, the University of Michigan doesn't know anything about football. I'll give you that, and I'll leave it there. Let's not throw in any other schools into that mix. Hugh Hewitt hosts the Hugh Hewitt Show, heard here on WPHN. We just have a quick minute left here, Hugh. Real quick, number one, number two choices for VP for Biden. Who do you think it's going to be?
It should be Kamala Harris. First rule of vice presidents, don't hurt yourself. The second person is likely Susan Rice. I think that's a huge negative. So if I think this should have been made weeks ago, Senator Harris. I've watched up close. She has terrific talent, even though she stumbled this year. First time around the track for president races. That happens. They may not like that she beat up on Joe Biden quite a bit in the primaries, but I like her. And I actually like Val Demings even more. I would be afraid of Val Demings the most out of Florida, Orlando policewoman for decades. She scares me, but she's dropped off the list. So I vote go with Kamala Harris, number one.
Well, hopefully we'll find out sometime this week, Hugh.
You bet. If it's Whitmer, I'm calling you to be on my show.
All right. I'll take you up on that bet. Hugh Hewitt, host of the Hugh Hewitt Show here on 1380 WPHM, which is coming up next, starting at 10 o'clock. So tune in for that. Hugh, thank you so much this morning.
Thanks, Caleb. On my way to the studio, I appreciate it.
All right. Go green. All right. Hugh Hewitt on 1380 WPHM. Hang tight as we have another half hour of the morning show coming up after this.